This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Tom and Brandy bringing you some sense of normality on Sunday, November the 29th. And we've been doing that with the help of not one but two energy analysts. With the big OPEC meeting coming up this week, we've been speaking to Ed Bell of Emirates NBD and Amina Bakker of the Energy Intelligence Group to get their thoughts on whether we will see those production cuts extended or not and what it might all mean for the price and therefore for us. Speaking of analysis and expertise, we've also been speaking to the Chief Investment Officer of Emirates NBD to get his picks for investments, where you should be putting your money at the moment. And looking at everything from lie-flat economy seats to beds you can work out of, complete with Bluetooth speakers. All of that to come, plus Nadia Swan has your COVID updates.
Now, where are we at with the cases at the moment?
Hi, Tom. So our cases in the UAE, 1,252 new cases were confirmed last night, and that's as a result of 148,245 tests. 741 people have recovered. The overall recovery tally stands at 153,449. Sadly, two more patients have died, bringing the total number of fatalities to 569. And so far, we've got a total of 165,502 diagnosed cases, of which 12,484 are currently active, Tom.
That's what's happening cases-wise. Listen, we've been getting quite a few questions throughout the course of the morning with regards to vaccines, etc. Thank you very much indeed to all those listeners that sent in their questions. Where are they? Here, this. Gregory asks, so much vaccine news worldwide, no news regarding efficiency, no news regarding availability. December was the last date told by Sinopharm, which is over a month ago, according to Gregory, who then goes on, says, have we got any more details on vaccine distribution, specifically starting here in the UAE? Nadia, what do we know about vaccines?
They were very much in the news, and they are obviously very much in the news, and I know you had those questions in earlier on. So talking about who's actually going to be in line for them, and then looking at when they might be available. So this is what Dr. Tedros of the World Health Organization had to say on the subject of vaccines and who would be in line for them, Tom.
As vaccines are rolled out, testing will continue to play a vital role. Initially, health workers, older people, and other at-risk groups will be prioritized for vaccination. That will still leave the virus with a lot of room to move, and testing will remain a vital tool for controlling the pandemic. If you don't know where the virus is, you can't stop it. If you don't know who has the virus, you can't isolate them, care for them, or trace their contacts.
So essentially, that's very much the way we're doing things here in the UAE. If you recall, it's really the frontline workers, people who are first in line and in contact with people who have got COVID-19, who need the protection. So those are currently the people who are in line for those, as well, of course, as the volunteers who signed up for the vaccine trials earlier on this year. Mm. So that's as far as it goes right now. There hasn't been any further news about when it will be rolled out to the general public at the moment. But obviously, as soon as we know, we'll keep you up to date with that, and there'll be announcements, no doubt, on that as well. In the meantime, along with the World Health Organization guidelines, we're just really strictly following the testing protocols over here, and we've seen over 148,000 tests yesterday, which is again one of the highest that we've had since the beginning of the month, when we had 154,000, just over 154,000. So really, really important, and you can see why. Unless you know where the virus is, you can't track it, you can't trace it, you can't quarantine and isolate people to try and control the spread of it.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, that is the recurring theme, isn't it, coming out of the WHO, coming out of all organisations fighting against COVID-19 at the moment, is that, you know, the more we learn about the virus, the more we learn about the way to deal with the virus, it becomes more abundantly clear that testing is going to be crucial. Even when the vaccine becomes available to us as well, the testing process is something that we're going to have for quite some time.
Yes, I think that's going to be with us for quite some time. I know one of the concerns on the vaccine front that a lot of people have expressed, not just here but internationally as well, is the super chilled temperatures that, for instance, the Pfizer vaccine has to be stored at. Now, I can understand the concerns, and yet what's actually happened is the World Health Organization, Dr. Kate O'Brien, pointed out that it's not a first.
The Pfizer vaccine, as you indicated, does require what we refer to as an ultra cold chain, so very, very cold temperatures. And we do have one other vaccine that has required that degree of temperature, very cold temperature, and that's the Merck Ebola vaccine. So we do have experience in a number of countries, specifically in Africa, of being able to deploy a vaccine with that ultra cold chain requirement.
So, interestingly, again, the UAE playing a major role in that. Concerns there about distributing something that's actually going to have to withstand those sort of temperatures. But, you know, we've got our hubs here in the UAE where we've been developing the facility to store millions of vaccine doses at those ultra-cold temperatures and distribute them throughout the world. I know you had a bit of a debate about this last week.
We did indeed, yeah. It's just, it's fascinating to know that these cold labs are available here, fundamentally in the desert as well. So that's just one of a number of stories that you guys are following up on. Some good news coming out over the weekend with regards to tourism figures.
Yes, that's right. Dubai Tourism say that there's a safe restart of the event sector and the city's gradually moving back towards normality. And in fact, they're saying that the hotels in the Emirates have enjoyed an occupancy level of 51% in September. So, you know, given the circumstances around the world, those are really very encouraging numbers. And they are stressing, though, that while the air corridor between the UAE and the UK has helped improve things, even so, they've still got very, very strict measures in place to make sure that tourists coming in and everybody over here just abides by the safety measures. So, you know, safe tourism, healthy tourism, making sure that all the precautions are in place and observed. And the municipality are everywhere, carrying out their inspections and things.
Have we seen evidence of that? Have you seen evidence of more tourists in town?
Funnily enough, I've been having this discussion with people this weekend because we've sort of said if you go to a mall, you don't necessarily know who a tourist is and who a tourist isn't, if that makes any sense. But anecdotally, I am hearing of a lot more people who are over, particularly on stopovers. I was speaking to a New Zealand friend this weekend, normally based in the States. He's based in New York. He's in finance. He had been in the Maldives diving, going through Dubai, chose to spend 3 or 4 days here on the way through, have a little bit of a look around, a holiday within a holiday, if you like. And I feel like there's quite a bit of that going on.
Do share your thoughts with us. We'd love to get your experiences. And one more from me to you, if that's okay, Nadia. The Seeds of the Union, spectacular. Obviously, we've got the 49th UAE National Day upcoming. The celebrations will go into extra gear a little later on this week. One of those is this big Seeds of the Union show. Can we go or not?
Well, what's happening is it's actually been screened at cinemas. So instead of having people crowding around trying to watch anything, it's being safely screened with all due precautions in place. And it'll be taking place at the Vox Cinemas on the 2nd of December. The showings are free and they take place at 5:30. You do have to book tickets, obviously, because they are very, very popular. The COVID-19 precautions, as I said, will be observed across all the venues. And apparently it really sounds quite spectacular, Tom. It's a moving sculpture surrounded by sea and illuminated by digital visuals, which is hard to say, portraying themes inspired by the UAE's history and values. So you can watch it here in Dubai at the Mall of the Emirates and in Al Ain on its Vox Cinema in Al Jumeirah Mall and in Abu Dhabi at the Yas Mall, Marina Mall and Nation Towers.
Lovely jubbly. And Nadia, thank you very much indeed for all of that.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, where we are looking at what recent events, a potential coronavirus vaccine, rising numbers, though, across Europe and the US, and a transition to a Joe Biden presidency, all mean for your investments. Where should you be putting your money right now? We are joined by Maurice Gravier, who is Chief Investment Officer at Emirates NBD. Maurice, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good morning, Wendy.
Let's dig into the record US closes that I've just been talking about. A record for the Dow last week, the S&P 500 on Friday. What's the story?
Oh, the story is quite simple. With the US election outcome and, of course, the vaccine breakthrough, we have a clearer path to normalization. That's, you know, as simple as that. the scenario of recovery next year is getting more comfort. And what matters maybe more than this fundamental catalyst is the fact that many institutional investors were very defensively positioned. They were not believing in it. So that's why you see in 1 month, just in November, which is not over, equities rallying like 15%, because it's this combination of positive catalyst, more political clarity, and a brighter outlook because of the vaccine, with ultra-low positioning.
What's the Emirates NBD house view? Do you expect that rally to continue?
That's interesting. I remember that when I was with you last time, it was exactly a month ago, and you had just bought a tracker on stocks, and we approved this. We have always been very constructive because of this medium-term recovery. We always thought that the virus would be under control in one way or another with the vaccine. The good news is that we will be able to contain the virus without limit the mobility. So the scenario is the same. I would say it's constructive. What has changed maybe is the fact that now it's priced in by many segments of the market. And what I was just mentioning, the fact that we had a pool of buyers because people were too defensively positioned, it is quickly normalizing. So looking forward, we remain constructive, but we think it's time to be more selective. It's not about buying anything. And what we have changed in the last month is that we are now slightly underweight in developed market stocks, but we are really overweight in emerging market stocks. So we believe that the outlook, is still constructive, but you have to be more selective, and emerging markets are the place to be, we think.
Okay, so talk to me a little bit more about being selective. When you say emerging markets, what are you actually talking?
Oh, we talked, you're right, it's a galaxy. Well, first, all the emerging markets have positive drivers. I would say that the better oil prices are good for the GCC, for Latin America, but the real story looking forward for the long term with secular drivers is emerging Asia. So it's true for China, better fundamentals. They have no recession this year. It's just amazing, and they will accelerate sharply next year. But also India, you were talking about India just before. Yes, there has been a very severe recession in India. They might have lost 9% of their GDP this year, which is amazing. But next year, consensus expect 13% growth. And there are secular drivers because population is young, well-educated, and the GDP per capita is still way below where it should be. So there is still a secular story to play. Emerging Asia is the place.
Emerging Asia. What about the more conventional markets, the more established markets? What about Europe? What about the U.S.?
Well, we are not really pessimistic on developed markets. We just feel that, the medium-term outlook is better, but in the short term, we will suffer because there is a second wave in the West and in the Northern Hemisphere, because it also affects Russia. So the news in the coming months are not going to be necessarily very good. Markets anticipate, that's a fact, and they are right to do so, but they are probably priced a bit more than the outlook in the short term. For next year, we find some upside, and the beauty of Europe is the fact that it is more cyclical in terms of sectors. It is more value, and by the way, Europe has been one of the best regions in the months of November in this rotation. Having said that, we expect a pause in developed markets, and we'll be happy to buy if there is any turbulence in the coming months. We find some upside. I would say single-digit upside for developed markets for next year, but double-digit upside for emerging markets.
What about being a little bit more sector-specific, Maurice? I mean, the sort of received wisdom at the moment is that tech stocks, work-from-home stocks, stay-at-home stocks might decline on the back of a vaccine, and travel stocks may pick up, those that suggest things are going back to normal. Is that simplistic?
No, it's not simplistic. Markets are sometimes a kind of a simplistic behavior, and you have to be aware of it. Everything cyclical, especially everything that is related to the services and to mobility. So it includes, of course, airline, hospitality, restaurant, but also energy and some mining stocks. All these stocks, they are in deep value territory, and their earnings recovery will be stronger. There's no doubt. Having said that, there are various time horizons. In the very short term, this rotation favors this sector. So you have, it's not a good idea to not to have any bank or any energy stock. In the medium term, recovery can lift everyone because we're talking economic recovery. Having said that, on a 3-5 years horizon, we are still talking about a tepid growth at best and mountains of debt. So in this context, companies which create their own demand, such as technology or healthcare through innovation, they are not to be forgotten. And they work. It's the same thing that for emerging markets. You have secular drivers there. So they have their place in a portfolio, just maybe a bit less overweight than they were in the last years.
Oh, we've got a question coming in for you, Maurice, from KP, who wants to know your outlook, medium-term outlook for gold.
Ah, fantastic question. Thank you very much. Well, gold is suffering now, and there's no surprise, because it's been and it still is the best performing asset class of the year. It's up 18% in 2020. It was up 30% just a month ago. So it has suffered, which is logical because we see this pro-cyclical rotation. You have the best performing asset class, which is defensive. So people are selling it. Having said that, we live in a world of massive money printing. All the fiat currencies are being created out of thin air everywhere, and we believe that the role of gold as a store of value is intact. So short term, we will suffer, but we remain overweight. And look at cryptocurrencies. If Bitcoin is up 130%, something like that, because it's a store of value, well, I'm not shocked to see gold being up 18%. And we would keep it. It's one of the best defensive assets. Don't buy government bonds as a defensive asset. They yield nothing. They are not diversifying anymore. Keep a bit of gold and close your eyes. It doesn't matter the short term value.
Speaking of closing your eyes and investing for the long term, Maurice, you know that Rich and I both have the same strategy, which is we buy the very boring tracker funds and hold them long term, and that we've been waiting for dips during the pandemic. And, well, there just hasn't been. I was chatting to a friend yesterday who's starting to pursue the same strategy, but is quite put off by the level of stocks at the moment and the fact that they just keep rising. Do you see any dips on the horizon, or should investors just take the plunge, taking the view that it's better to be in the markets than not?
You know, if there is one thing that market experience teaches you, and I've been doing that for 22 years, is that you cannot time the market. It's impossible. There's just no way. So we had one massive dip in March, and then we had nothing. We were also expecting turbulences, and we went overweight at the end of September on a 3% dip, something like that, which is not much. I would say you're right. Well, the most important thing you said is the long-term horizon. And when you are in the long-term horizon, your entry point is not as important as the discipline. So we would recommend to invest like every month or every quarter a given amount, in which case you smoothen the volatility. And if there is a dip, you're in. If there is no dip and markets keep on rallying, you're in as well. So the long-term matters. Don't go in risk assets if you don't have the long-term horizon. If you have the long-term horizon, don't try to time the market. It's really impossible.
Thanks very much for joining us and giving us your insights this morning. Speaking there to Maurice Gravier, who is Chief Investment Officer of Emirates NBD.
Investments go up and investments go down. Before putting your hard-earned money into any investment, Dubai Eye 103.8 advises you to always do your own background research. Ensure you're informed to navigate the market and any potential pitfalls. Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And now, time for a little bit of this.
Black Friday. Time to go to the mall.
Black Friday.
I'm gonna purchase it all.
Black Friday.
It's that time of year.
Black Friday
is the day retail employees fear.
Black Friday.
Wow.
That's woken you up, hasn't it? A tale of two sales this morning. Two headlines from the same news organisation, CNBC. Here is headline number one. Black Friday 2020 online shopping surges 22% to record $9 billion. Yay! Here's headline number two. Black Friday shopping in stores craters 52% during pandemic. It was very different online from it was in the stores. In fact, the FT this morning calling the physical Black Friday, obviously taking notes from your son, Gus, Tom, Grey Friday.
Grey. That's what I got really confused about. There just seemed to be so many. All the colours of the rainbow were being mentioned yesterday. Yellow Friday, Blue Friday, Grey Friday.
White Friday.
White Friday. Mm. I mean,
can we choose
a colour and stick to that on a Friday?
It's been adopted by different brands.
Purple.
Black Friday is how it's always been known in the US, and then, of course, followed by Cyber Monday tomorrow, which is supposed to be all the tech deals, but you can get all the tech deals on Black Friday anyway because all of the Amazons and the rest of them sell tech. So. Basically, it's the post-Thanksgiving shopping glut up until Christmas. Let's look at the good news, which Adobe have put together every year. They do the numbers on this one. 22%. It's the second busiest online shopping day for Black Friday in history. 22% rise, $9 billion spent, 21.6% over last year. So, quite a big growth on 2019, which is interesting given that all anyone has done this year has actually been shop online. A lot of the sales started a bit early, and there's a lot of analysts saying, are we going to see a dissolution of the normal shopping period? Will it start to start earlier from now on? Smartphone sales up 25% online, and 40% of all e-commerce spending was actually on phones, which is kind of remarkable. Biggest thing people bought, as well as phones, Apple AirPods, Apple Watches, Amazon Echoes, Samsung TVs, and Hot Wheels. However, if you were a bricks and mortar retailer, it was not a great day for you in the US, at least. 52% drop in traffic compared to last year. People worried about the pandemic, people worried about social distancing, not wanting to be out there in the malls. I suppose if you had an online presence as a retailer, not so bad for you. But some of the niche stores that aren't so good at attracting people online, the multi-brand stores, like your department stores, are going to be outdone by the big online stores. So it's not as good for them.
Wow.
But is it... I mean... You're going to have to help me out with this whole these Friday promotion things, because I just don't get. I mean, is it any different from other days? I just don't get why you're being driven online. The great deals to be had all year round online, I'm led to believe. Correct?
There are you get your bigger discounts. The idea is you have effectively a weekend. It's called Black Friday. It's never one day. It's the Friday. It's the Saturday. It's usually the Sunday, and then the Cyber Monday picks in. It's the start of the sales season, and the idea is that you've got your biggest bargains to be had. So if you know you need a tally, you wait until the Friday. You go on and you try to get the best bargains before they sell out. That's the theory. Does anything actually sell out anymore? There's another question.
Yeah, it just goes back to my sort of, you know, the fact that we've become so conscious of all things online and all things e-commerce in the times of COVID, whether it's a little of the sheen has come off these big day promotions.
Well, it would seem not online. I mean, the numbers say no, people are still buying more so than before.
But I feel here, I mean, we have sales, like you said, throughout. Yeah. And then, of course, with, like, if you're thinking of tech, we have Gitex coming up where you do get better deals on tech, you know, than you would other times during the year. So I think over here it's a slightly different concept, where Black Friday is more another sale that's happening online. But I guess in places like America, it's the one time when there is a massive sale, and that's why maybe the sales are higher there than it will be here.
So, Shrieks, for your part, have you been looking to buy some flights over the course of the last few days? We haven't seen you for the last few days.
I wish.
It was your birthday.
It was my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. No, I did not buy any flights. I wish. But no, I am looking at economy seats where you can sleep. So like a lie flat.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Lufthansa is trialing this, and they're calling it the sleeper row. And what they're going to do is you're going to get the three or four seats, you know, the one next to you, the entire row. And they'll give you blankets and they'll give you a pillow, and then you can sort of spread out and sleep there. But when I was reading this, you have to pay $260 on top of your ticket price. So that's about 600 or 800 dirhams on top of this to get that little extra row to sleep in. Would you ever spend that much money on an economy seat?
See, it's quite punchy, isn't it? Because that's basically a hotel room, isn't it?
Mm.
So you're sort of thinking, oh, okay, well, is that money that I want to spend upon arrival at my destination? If you're on a business trip, you'd hope that whichever client was paying for it, whether it be work or otherwise, and you have to get sleep along the way, you'd hope that they put you in business. Is it that much difference? Another $800 to $260? I suppose I would if I was absolutely whacked and needed it. But then again, you're in a you're in economy.
Yeah.
And there's lots going on around you at all times. And it sounds like this sleeper row is in the middle of other rows, correct?
I mean, it's on all the sides. You know, you get to wherever your seat is, you get the rest of it. You can book it in advance.
Yeah.
But my point is, unless you are vertically challenged like me, you are not going to fit into that.
True.
So yeah. It's you're paying 600 dirhams. You can't spread out. You probably get hit by the trolley if you have your legs out. 600 dirhams for that.
There's no greater delight than checking in, though, and discovering that you're the only one in the row of seats and watching everyone, eyeballing everyone as they walk down the aisle, thinking, don't stop here, don't stop here. Jedi mind tricks. And then you hear them shut the door and you think, I've done it. I've absolutely done it.
But would that mean now you wouldn't get an entire row because they obviously want to sell it? So they
Maybe.
Make sure people sit next to each other and then those who do pay for it get the entire row.
It does show, though, the sort of level of intent that airlines are sort of looking into at the moment in terms of how do we monetize and maximize the space that we've got on the planes at the moment. Because that would suggest that there is concern that business class or business flights will not come back as quickly. It's not so they won't come back, but won't come back as quickly as economy. I think economy would probably be the first one for people to start seizing onto. So how do we maximize the potential therein? Anything. I'm just one of those ones. It doesn't matter if I'm first class, business class, economy class, in a private jet, in a luxury four-poster. I ain't sleeping.
No.
I just cannot sleep on flights.
What do you do on long-haul flights,
Party.
Then?
Oh.
Okay.
Like it's 1969, and it usually is, but by the time you arrive... I just can't sleep. I mean, and you've got those people that can literally doze off whenever they get onto a plane. It's just the very sound of a plane, so it makes them doze off. Mm-mm, not me.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Can I talk to you about two new work from home policies and the scariest bit of tech I've ever seen to help you do it?
Yes, indeed.
Right. So we've got two major companies coming out and talking about the fact that even post-pandemic, they are going to see more of their staff working from home in a hybrid model. The first is PayPal, and they've got about 23,000 staff around the world. Their CEO's been speaking to Bloomberg Television, and he reckons we're never going to go back to exactly what it was. Some people will work more from home, some people will come back to the office, but he reckons it is going to be, for the vast majority, what he calls a 3-2 hybrid. So 3 days in one place, 2 days in the other,
okay.
Depending on what your actual job is. Meanwhile, Deutsche Bank is trying to figure out how they are going to move forward post-pandemic, and they are going to offer some staff, not all staff, again, the 3-2 model, but with a 2-day at-home policy, if you like, and then 3 days back in the office. They are, according to a spokesperson who's been speaking to Business Insider, exploring what positive lessons Deutsche Bank can learn from the crisis about how they work as a bank in the future. And they are working on a hybrid model as well, although it will depend. Deutsche Bank, obviously, branches around the world, local regulations, how good cybersecurity is and networks are in different countries in which they operate. Interesting that one, because Deutsche Bank were the ones who came out with a report that quite frankly petrified Richard Dean, suggesting that people who work from home should pay extra tax for doing so.
Yeah.
Because they weren't buying sandwiches, they weren't buying coffee, they weren't putting petrol in their cars, they weren't buying work socks, and therefore were actually contributing less to the economy whilst still earning the same and should be for putting more in the tin through tax. And now I introduce you to the Hariana Tech Smart Ultimate Bed for the work-from-home generation.
Okay.
Hariana, which is a company I had never heard of before, owned by Jubilee Furniture, have come out with, if you picture a very large futon.
Yeah.
Bed in the middle of the futon. But this also includes sort of a lazy boy on the side, a table and two chairs. The idea being that you can be in bed and then just kind of roll yourself sideways onto a sofa or push yourself forward into actual chairs. It has a movable desk platform with space for a laptop. It has Bluetooth-enabled speakers in the side of the bed. It has a reading lamp It has a charging station for your laptop, and it has an air cleaning system. I'm not quite sure how that works, but the whole thing being that you can work in bed and then be sitting upright in a chair for your Zoom calls or reclining on this lazy board reclinery thing if you need to. It's got space for your books as well. It's got Bluetooth malarkey. Why leave? It looks hideous, by the way.
Yeah.
It's all clad in a sort of a mid-90s bachelor-esque black leather.
Yeah, it's not working for me, this one. It feels like it's getting a little bit comfortable all of a sudden. And isn't that...
Comfortable? Did I tell you the recliner has 9 massage modes?
There we go. And that's not... If that's your equivalent of an office... Offices aren't meant to be comfortable, are they? They're meant to sort of shock you into sort of work. You know, there got to be spaces that are of productivity. That sounds like a space of enjoyment and convenience.
Well, the makers call it, and I am going to say this with a completely straight face, an adult playground.
I'm sure they do.
One of the comedian who's been commenting on Twitter, Kirsten Meinsner, has just titled it, "I've Given Up."
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds very much like that. You know, it's that whole, you know, why get out of bed, do everything in bed, work from there. Work from home has now become work from bed.
Yeah. No, this
is taking duvet days to a whole new level.
Something depressing, because you'd never have to actually walk at all. You'd never have to take an actual
step.
That's
my problem, is that that's what's happening now, is that there is no walking going on. Is that you get shopping delivered to you, to your doorstep, so you don't walk anywhere to go and do any shopping. You don't have to go to the office, so you don't have to walk into an office. You don't have to park anywhere because you're not going to an office. And now you don't even have to leave your bed. We're all going to be absolutely huge blobs.
It's a big bed, fortunately.
We're just going to become huge blobs working.
Don't.
From our bed come... lazy boy chair.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
I'm going to take a look at what's been happening to oil markets. We have, starting tomorrow, some big OPEC meetings, some decisions to be made about whether or not those taps need to be loosened a little bit. And that has been preceded, or at least will be preceded today, by a meeting of the OPEC Plus group to make sure that everyone's on the same page. Amina Becker is the deputy editor of the Energy Intelligence Group. We've been asking her about the meeting before the meeting.
There were a number of technical meetings held yesterday, and those meetings were basically to prepare reports for the ministers ahead of the upcoming OPEC and OPEC Plus meeting, which are happening on the 30th of November and the 1st of December. So those reports are basically looking at fundamentals. They're looking at supply-demand balances, what course of action, or recommending what course of action the ministers should take. So those were basically a preparation stage. However, today there's an extraordinary JMMC meeting between ministers who are part of that committee, and they're holding informal consultations. And we're expecting, because during the last JMMC meeting, there was no recommendation of what course of action the group would take. So today's the expectation is that they will be recommending a course of action.
And what course of action, then, are they likely to be recommending?
That was the idea. I mean, when they signed the deal earlier in the year, the idea was to ease the production cuts by January 2021. However, given the market conditions, the proposals that are currently on the table is an extension of the current cuts level, which is 7.7 million barrels a day, into 2021. So this extension will take place either 3 to 6 months. However, delegates are telling us that 3 months is the most likely scenario. So they will extend the cuts just because, you know, we are seeing another new round of lockdowns. Demand hasn't recovered. Despite the oil price, I mean, you've seen the oil price go up. We're up to $48 now. But that's not necessarily a reflection of demand. And the group needs to keep the current cuts in place.
Right. So what are we expected to see in terms of production levels? We've had not one analyst, but two on this morning. Ed Bell is Senior Director of Market Economics at Emirates NBD. We asked him what he expected to see.
Now, the level of increase that is actually on the cards is about 2 million barrels a day, which may not sound like a lot in a pre-COVID-19 oil market of around 100 million barrels a day of demand. But as we stand right now, the outlook for 2021 is that supply and demand will be very precariously balanced. So any deviation from target production levels would push the market back into surplus, building up oil inventories and put downward pressure on prices. OPEC Plus also not getting a hand from producers elsewhere, as most of the decline that we saw in U.S. production has already happened, and expectations are that the U.S. is going to be able to increase production next year rather than keep it flat or decrease.
We asked Amina, what kind of price level is the OPEC Plus group looking for?
Depends on which country, but still, I mean, the 40s is not something that, I mean, this is not a price level that supports many of the state budgets. They never, ever talk about prices, but we understand, for example, Gulf state companies here, the national oil companies, would ideally like to see $60. But again, these numbers are never mentioned in public.
How unified, we asked also, is the group over any kind of action?
I think, I mean, we're going into this meeting with both Saudi Arabia and Russia very unified. They're on the same page. They both think that an extension of the deal is needed. However, there are other countries which were looking forward to easing the production cuts. At the last JMMC meeting, the UAE energy minister had a point. He said that the extension of the deal should happen only if all countries reach 100% compliance. And we shouldn't extend if the countries are not going to be 100% compliant, which is a really good point. So we'll see how they address that. Just my opinion, I think that they're going to extend the compensation scheme, which is if any country overproduces, they make up for the cuts in the following months. So they have to extend that plan into 2021.
Oh, look, oil has gained for the last 4 weeks. It's been buoyed up by a couple of things. Number one has been the idea of a successful vaccine, which would mean that people were moving around a lot more and therefore they would require a lot more energy to do so. Number two has been the start of some sort of transition to the next US administration. That also has made oil quite happy. Let's look at the prices where we have been left in the weekend. WTI at $45.53. Brent crude at $48.18. And what is the point of speaking to a couple of experts if you don't at least get their outlook for prices, which is, of course, very important to us here in the UAE, even if you don't work in the energy industry or think that your sector isn't informed by it, touched by it. If Richard Dean were here, he would tell you that it absolutely is, because it affects everything here. It affects sentiment. It affects how much the government is spending. It affects the budget surplus, all of the rest of it. So, Amina first. We said, what is your outlook, or what is the Energy Intelligent Group's outlook for the price?
We're sticking with our expectations at Energy Intelligence. We said that oil prices or Brent would reach $50 at the end of the year. We're at 48 now, so that's on track. Going into 2021, it's still a little bit too early to see how the price is going to react. But we also have to see, I mean, according to a lot of external factors, we've seen a lot of maritime attacks happen in the region recently. And these kind of events do have an impact on price.
And we put the same question to Ed Bell, Senior Director of Market Economics at Emirates NBD. The meetings as well. What's his outlook for oil prices?
Oil prices have been holding close to around $45 a barrel for the Brent price for most of the second half of the year. And the potential to move much higher is really being frustrated by the COVID-19 pandemic and governments needing to reimpose lockdown measures hitting oil demand. With little control over the demand side of the equation, it's going to be crucial for OPEC Plus to get its messaging right this week, whatever course of action they choose to decide.
All right. So there you go. Two oil experts for the price of one, Ed Bell from Emirates NBD and Amina Bakker from the Energy Intelligence Group.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.